And good morning. Coming up on 10 minutes before 8 a.m. Central, 9 Eastern, I'm Joe Corcoran for WKU Public Radio. It was back in 1986, police found the bodies of a young couple in their burned Eastern Illinois home. They'd been brutally murdered. 7 months later, Randy Steidel and another man were arrested for the crime. A year after that, the murders, Steidel was found guilty and sentenced to death. The problem was he didn't do it. After spending 17 years on death row, he was exonerated and released from prison in 2004. Randy Steidel will be telling his story later this afternoon on WKU's campus, and he joins us now live in the studio. Mr. Steidel, good morning. Thanks for coming in this morning to talk with us.
Good morning.
I don't think anyone can really imagine spending nearly two decades on death row, especially for a crime they didn't commit. In fact, you've described it in the past as torture.
It was. Death row was absolute torture, knowing that the state of Illinois was intent on murdering me for a crime I did not commit.
If we can go back just a minute briefly to your arrest and the trial, how did things go so wrong back then that you and your co-defendant Herb Whitlock were found guilty in the first place?
Herb Whitlock and myself had reported the local prosecutor to the FBI 6 weeks before these murders occurred. We reported to the FBI about this state's attorney who knowingly protected drug distribution in this small town, money laundering and gambling, along with Karen Rhodes' employer. She was one of the victims in this case. And we feel that we became suspects almost immediately after the murders in order to protect organized crime element in that town and police and prosecutorial misconduct.
Once you were arrested and brought into court and eventually sent to jail, it was an amazingly fast trial.
It was. I had a corroborated alibi, which remains corroborated this very day. There was no physical or forensic evidence tying me to this crime. And I grew up in a town where I believed in cooperating with law enforcement. My brother was an Illinois State Police officer. I had a grandfather that was a deputy sheriff. And I believed that all I had to do was get on the stand and tell the truth.
But it was a trial marked by, am I wrong in saying, ineffective defense counsel, poor, you know,
I was
evidence,
naive.
Unstable eyewitnesses?
Oh, I had a severely mentally ill woman who claimed to have been witnessed the crime along with the town drunk that came forward shortly after a $25,000 reward was offered throughout the bars in every bar in that town by Karen Rhodes' employer.
So then what happened to finally lead to your release from prison?
After both of these eyewitnesses had recanted numerous times, and I still lost every state appeal with a second execution date, I had the federal habeas corpus petition that I had filed, and an honest state police officer reviewed the case and took to the high command that there was evidence of misconduct and that they did not prove Steidel or Whitlock guilty beyond a reasonable doubt, and he tried five times to reopen the case. But because Karen Rhodes' employer had made tens of thousands of dollars in campaign donations through Governor Ryan's office, the Illinois State Police brass told this honest state police investigator that the case is too politically sensitive and you're not to reinvestigate. And finally, I had won a new trial by the federal court because evidence favoring the defense was purposely withheld, which vindicated this state cop who had stood his ground for almost 5 years.
And then a group of students at Northwestern University in Chicago got involved, as they have done in several
Absolutely.
Other cases, and they started, amazingly enough, turning up new evidence.
It was amazing because in conjunction with Lieutenant Michael Callahan, this state police officer, these four students went to the hometown and knocked on doors, uncovered 20 additional witnesses that were available to the police and to my trial attorney had they just done the legwork. That corroborated my defense.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. That's a journalism program they do up there in Northwestern with investigative journalism students. So just to wrap this up, what is your status now? I know you're still waiting for a formal pardon from the governor of Illinois.
That makes me think my case is too politically sensitive. I've been waiting on a pardon for the last 12 years through the last three governor's offices. And I recently settled a partial lawsuit against the state of Illinois. The state police specifically decided that they didn't want to go to trial. And for the last 8 years, I've been actively involved with an organization called Witness to Innocence. It's made up of exonerated death row inmates. And this is what I do today is we try to educate faith groups, colleges, and legislators that there's a better way. Life without parole is an alternative sentence to the death penalty, and at least you don't risk the possibility of executing an innocent person. Mm-hmm. You can release an innocent man from prison, but you can't release him from the grave.
When you were exonerated in Illinois, weren't you like the 18th person to be exonerated because of a bad trial, lack of evidence?
Illinois had 20 death row exonerations, and I was number 18.
And it wasn't shortly after that that the then-Governor Ryan halted all executions?
He put a moratorium in place, and Governor Blagojevich kept the moratorium in place. And finally, after a year of lobbying by Witness to Innocence members in Illinois, Governor Quinn signed the bill to abolish the death penalty because he saw where it was fatally flawed. It was a failed public policy, and there's no way to fix the death penalty because it's implemented by humans, and humans make mistakes.
Mm-hmm. What was your life like? I want to say what your life like is now, but especially once you first got out of prison. What was your life like having your freedom as far as reconnecting with your family, finding a job?
It's very difficult. I walked out of prison after 6,305 days into a new world. It was like being Rip Van Winkle, waking up after 20 years. I didn't know what a cell phone was, a laptop. I didn't even know how to pump gas. And luckily, I had went to Missouri and got a job in a printing industry, got some good insurance. I got some counseling. And, you know, if it hadn't been for help from people outside the state of Illinois, I don't know where I'd be today.
Mm-hmm. We mentioned earlier, before we went on the air, about your co-defendant, how he's doing. Have you put your... If it's possible, put your issues of anger and resentment aside to get on with your life?
I try. I try to focus on the positive. I don't try to think about yesterday, but I have anger issues. A third of my life was stolen illegally. And at the very least, the prosecutor and these three police officers that were the architects of my wrongful conviction, I believe they should be charged with premeditated attempted murder. I had two execution dates. My family didn't deserve that. My children didn't deserve that. And anybody that goes through this experience is going to have anger issues. That's why I focus on what I do today to try to change hearts and minds when it comes to capital punishment. If you really want to punish somebody, you put them in a cage for the rest of their life. That's punishment. I watched seven men being carried off to be executed. Not a one of them went kicking and screaming. 5 minutes on that gurney, they were being released. Their pain and their suffering was over with.
Hmm. How are you doing with, have you reconnected with your family?
And... Absolutely. I've got four grandchildren now, and my kids are all adults. You know, I missed, I had to watch them all grow up in pictures, so yeah. It's like starting over.
Yeah. And on the legal side of it, you have lawsuits. I know doing my research on this a little bit, Illinois State Police have agreed to pay a $2.5 million settlement for a lawsuit. Are you seeing any of that money?
Yes, I saw a portion of it after the attorneys get their cuts, and I feel like the state police, it was an admission when they offered to settle for their part in it.
The attorneys there was very clear and very legal wording that this is not an admission of guilt on our part, this is not a concession of anything, but we are paying this gentleman $2.5 million for what? I don't know what.
What defendant in a lawsuit would pay $2.5 million to a suspect in a double murder?
Well, as we said before, Randy Steidel will be speaking at 3 o'clock Central Time this afternoon, telling his story in room 125 of Cherry Hall on the WKU campus. Then later this evening, he'll be traveling up to Brescia University in Owensboro for another talk. And again, we thank you very much for coming in this morning, carving out a few minutes of your day.
I just want to thank you for giving me this opportunity. I want to thank Catherine Miller of the ACLU for making it possible for me to come to Kentucky to help change hearts and minds when it comes to capital punishment. Thank you.
Very good. Randy Steidel, thank you very much.